Tragically, we've all experienced the utter disappointment of picking up the paper to read about a leader who's fallen into sin. Compromise, secrets, and cover-ups. It's become all too common in our culture. But crossing the boundaries is actually not new to our generation. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll shares a shocking story of a biblical hero who gave in to temptation and paid dearly for his indiscretion. Clearly, this man's demise should strike fear in our hearts and cause us to create well-defined boundaries to protect our personal integrity. Here's Chuck Swindoll on creating a legacy of moral purity.
The shrill ring of the telephone startled me in the quietness of my study. Within a matter of seconds, the message that came broke my heart. Another fellow minister had fallen morally. Another fellow soldier of the cross, who had once led his flock into the battle and stood strong and sometimes virtually alone, now no longer had the voice or the message or the authority to speak to his congregation. He had disgracefully deserted the ranks. And I will tell you what first flashed through my mind. I returned to an ancient scene in my mind that was once a battle scene, but now only the spoils of war could be found. A few splotches of blood where lives had been taken, and the Philistines had won another battle over the people of God. It was there at that battle on Mount Gilboa, the king had died, along with many from his army, including his own son, Jonathan. When news reached the king-elect, who didn't know at the time what had happened, he was stunned and decided, as an act of respect, he would write a eulogy, which became one of his songs. And there was a line in the song that David wrote that came through my mind, which was connected to the fall of King Saul in battle. David wrote it, "Achi naflu giborim v'thok hamil chama." How the mighty are fallen in battle. I then wondered if that same line, some 20 years later, haunted that man when he fell. After David turned 50 years of age, after he has succeeded Saul so successfully as the king for those two decades, after he has distinguished himself as not only a composer of many of the songs, but also as the national leader, and more importantly, a man of God, after David had faithfully kept his father's sheep, proved himself a valiant warrior, after he had, of course, slain the man most notorious in the Philistine army while still a lad, David became known as a man not only of passion, but of compassion. There was none more mighty than David. No army more feared than Israel's. No flag flew higher or prouder than Israel's. To this day, the people of Israel will tell you he was their greatest king. They named the city after him. The flag is called that magnificent blue and white Star of David. That's David, the mighty one. That's David, the successful king. And I overworked this part of his life, lest you think he was some kind of predator of weak women. On the contrary, he is a man who stood in defense of men and women alike. In fact, just before his own fall, he has shown enormous compassion by placing a disabled man who could not walk without the assistance of crutches, Mephibosheth, and given him a place at the king's table. He's the kind of leader you and I would have not only loved to follow, but would have died for. That's David. And in the midst of all of this, he fell. I can't speak for any other minister sitting in this place, but I can tell you for myself, there are times it puts a chill up my back. Before we open this life and do a little autopsy of a moral fall, it's important that you and I understand that he who thinks he stands needs to take heed, lest we fall. I am 1 hour removed from any fall. I am on occasion seconds removed from a major fall at any time in my life, and so are you. So this message is not only an analysis of one who fell, it is a warning to all who think you never will, or that you couldn't. Let's begin by reminding ourselves of that. While David's fall was certainly severe, it was not sudden. F.B. Meyer once put it this way, no man suddenly becomes base. The Romans had a statement that they would pass around, Nemo repente fit turpissimus. No man reaches the heights of vice at once. David didn't suddenly fall. Oh, the record is a sudden appearance in 2 Samuel 11, but it isn't a sudden fall any more than a tree suddenly rots, or a church suddenly splits, or a marriage suddenly fractures into a divorce. There is no such thing. In the words of C.S. Lewis, the long, dull, monotonous years of middle-aged prosperity or middle-aged adversity are excellent campaigning weather for the devil. Excellent campaigning weather. David's fall began long before he crawled between the sheets with Bathsheba, to put it bluntly. David was weakened. And I will limit my thoughts for the sake of time to three areas of weakness that I want you to remember. First, polygamy weakened David. Polygamy. It's a surprise to new Christians to know that David and many of his contemporaries were polygamists. Against the clear warnings and teachings of the Lord, the Torah, Deuteronomy 17:17, which clearly states that a king was not to take many wives, David increased his harem. 2 Samuel 5:13. Please notice how it appears in the text of Scripture. Meanwhile, David took more concubines and wives from Jerusalem after he came from Hebron, and more sons and daughters were born to him. Meanwhile. Oh, by the way, I should add, there were more wives. It's as if the writer has by now become accustomed. You may have a Playboy boss, and it would be like you're saying, oh, and by the way, there was another woman on this last trip. It's serious stuff, but it appears so innocuous. Some of David's many wives, Ahinoam, Abigail, Maacah, Haggith, Abital, Eglah, Michal, names you hardly know. He slept with all of them. He married all of them. Meanwhile, David took more concubines when he got to Jerusalem. Just to clarify a fact, lest you're confused, one man puts it this way. Even though his wives and concubines increased, his passion was not abated. The king who took another man's wife already had a harem full of women. The simple fact is that the passion of sex is not satisfied by a full harem of women. It is increased. Having many women does not reduce a man's libido. It excites it. It stimulates it. David, being a man with a strong sexual appetite, mistakenly thought, to satisfy it, I will have more women. Thus, when he became the king, he added to his harem, but his drive only intensified. Furthermore, while thinking about the king's harem, who in the kingdom is qualified to blow the whistle on David? Look at his track record. A humble beginning, a giant killer, 2 decades of sterling leadership, choice men in the right places, a military force every foe respected, enlarged boundaries that went from 6,000 to 60,000 square miles. No defeats on the battlefield. No defeats. Exports, imports, strong national defense, financial health, a beautiful new home, plans for the temple of the Lord. Who could point a finger of accusation against such a king? So what if he married a few more women and privately increased the number of his concubines? Everything the king did pleased the people, 2 Samuel 3:36. You ever noted that verse? Everything the king did pleased all the people. So success weakened him. Never doubt it. Hard times are good for us. They're hard to go through, but they're good for us. The Scottish essayist Carlyle says, hardship is hard on a man, but for everyone who can handle prosperity, there are 100 that can take hardship. Success weakened him. His opinion poll is at an all-time high. No defeats on the battlefield. He had maximum power, huge following, plenty of money. He had a luxurious lifestyle in a new residential palace. His ratings certainly were above 95%, if they had such. This is David. Magnificent, handsome, long auburn hair, bronze skin from the sun, muscular. Warrior, tender-hearted songster, compassionate king. Let him have a few more women. That success won't turn his head. And I'll tell you third, indulgence weakened him. If polygamy weakened him, if success weakened him, I can assure you, indulgence weakened him. First two verses, 2 Samuel 11. It happened in the spring. Can't you feel the warm breezes blow now? Winter is past. Rains begin to fall. The flowers begin to bloom. It's beautiful in Israel. Jerusalem blossoms in the spring. At the time when kings go out to battle, read indulgence between the lines, David sent Joab, his servants, with him, and they destroyed the sons of Ammon and besieged Rabbah. Of course, Joab, tough as a junkyard dog. I mean, Joab, reliable. If he knows anything, it's battle. He'd kill at the snap of your finger and never take a second thought. Defending David, he'd do it in a heartbeat. Joab's reliable. No better man to have in battle than Joab. Oh, he has a deceitful side, but he can fight. He can fight. So David yawns and thinks, I'll stay back in Jerusalem. And evening comes. that fateful evening. Feel the warm evening breeze billowing the drapes in that upstairs bedroom. We need Reg Grant right now to picture this for us, don't we? An air of relaxed, unguarded indolence, idleness. You know the feeling when you just sit down to sort of surf the net. You know. Not exhausted, needing sleep, but indulging himself in idleness. Today he'd sit down at his computer. In those days, he threw his legs to the side of the bed, yawned and stretched, and pushed back the silk sheets. Ran his fingers through his hair. What's he doing in bed in the evening, anyway? What's he doing kicking back with his troops in battle? Joab's in battle. David arises from his bed. He's indulging himself. That's where trouble comes. His guard is down and he's ripe for a fall. When did all this happen? In the evening. I can't speak for you, but my weakest time on the road is in the evening. It's when I'm the loneliest. That's when I always make a call home. That's when I invariably pull out the pictures and look at my family. That's when I'm tempted. It's in the early evening when the sun goes down. Is this what David normally did at dusk? I did a little research on David at dusk and found that this is not his normal M.O. In his own words, evening, morning, and noon, I will pray and cry aloud, and he will hear my voice. He will redeem my soul in peace from the battle which is against me. Psalm 55, 17 and 18. Here's another from Psalm 141. May my prayer be counted as incense before you, the lifting up of my hands as the evening offering. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Do not incline my heart to any evil thing. In a paraphrase, do not let me so much as dream of evil or thoughtlessly fall. That's what he normally did in the evening. Not this evening. This evening will be different. It will be an evening that will haunt him for the rest of his days. Isn't difficult to reenact the scene, is it? You know the text so well. After yawning and pushing back the sheets, he stretches himself and stands, sort of looks around the room, and his eye catches the draperies as they're blowing in the evening breeze, and he hears splashing in the distance. He steps out on what we would call his patio roof, which is a place where a king could get a little bit of quiet privacy. And walking around on that roof, according to verse 2, from the roof he saw a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful in appearance. I've studied the Bible long enough to know that it does not exaggerate. When it says beautiful, believe me, she's beautiful. When it says very beautiful, count on it. Maybe he's never seen another woman quite like this. That's what all men think at times like this. She's naked. She is in a public place behind her house. And he stares. At this moment, he loses all cognizance of everything else. He doesn't think about who he is. He certainly doesn't think about any consequences. He forgets every psalm he ever wrote. He forgets every lesson God's ever taught him while running from Saul. He forgets all the respect he has earned. He forgets the little children that night praying for their king. He forgets all the people in his household and army who trust him. He forgets he's God's man. He forgets God. Doesn't hate God, he just forgets God. Nobody ever said it better than Dietrich Bonhoeffer. At this moment, describing temptation, in our members there is a slumbering inclination toward desire, which is both sudden and fierce. With irresistible power, desire seizes mastery of the flesh. All at once, a secret smoldering fire is kindled. At this moment, God is quite unreal. He loses all reality, and only desire for the creature is real. Satan does not here fill us with hatred of God, but with forgetfulness of God. The lust thus aroused envelops the mind and will of man in deepest darkness. I love this line. The powers of clear discrimination and of decision are taken from us. David stares. It's interesting. Verse 3 tells us he sent and inquired about the woman. He doesn't even know his neighbor's name. Some soft-footed servant slips by beside him, and David says, "Who is that?" Please notice how she's identified. Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite? She's married, David. Rarely was anyone identified by who their mate was. The genealogy usually links with father, sometimes father and mother. But here, the servant knows the thoughts of the king.
Listening to Insight for Living and Chuck Swindoll's message about creating a legacy of moral purity. We'll hear a closing comment from Chuck in just a moment, so please do stay with us. It's possible you're wrestling with a private battle right now, and you have nowhere to turn for help. Perhaps your secret struggles have consumed your thought life, and you want nothing more than to move beyond the pattern of failure and into a place of moral integrity. Well, Insight for Living has prepared a variety of helpful resources for you. Take time to go online and begin your recovery today. You'll find those materials at insightworld.org. You can also purchase the 4-part mini-series on either CD or MP3 file. Look for the series called Staying Pure in a World Gone Wild. We'll give our contact information again in just a moment. Just before we hear from Chuck, we need to underscore the importance of your donation to Insight for Living. Your contribution is making a difference as we provide Chuck's teaching on your station and over the Internet. Every day, we hear from men and women who let us know about life-changing decisions as a result of their encounter with God's Word. Chuck?
It was Abraham Lincoln who said, "No one is poor who had a godly mother." Most of us don't have to dig too deeply or reminisce very long to recall the profound impact that our own mother had on our lives. That's certainly true for me, and quite probably for you too. My earliest spiritual convictions were honed and nurtured by my mother. Over the last year, we've been working behind the scenes, preparing a one-of-a-kind resource just for you. It's filled with articles and interactive questions, even colorful anecdotes and personal applications. The subject, Women in the Life of Jesus. Our focus is on New Testament ladies who encountered Christ, like Mary of Nazareth and Elizabeth, and Peter's mother-in-law, the widow of Nain, Mary Magdalene, Jairus and his daughter, Martha of Bethany. How about the woman caught in adultery? These are all powerful stories of grace and compassion, forgiveness and faith. This publication has enough content to qualify as a book but we've decided to present the articles in a magazine-style format. It's both attractive and engaging, and more than that, it celebrates the impact of real women and the lessons we can learn from their encounters with the Lord Jesus. So please get a copy of the brand new magazine from Insight for Living today, Women in the Life of Jesus. Although it's a magazine type publication, it has all the practical and biblical content you've come to expect from this ministry.
The publication is yours when you give a donation of any amount. The financial demands on Insight for Living are sometimes overwhelming, but it's not overwhelming when you consider the number of people who hear this broadcast every day. A lot of people doing their part can make it happen. And when you give today, be sure to request the magazine, Women in the Life of Jesus. In fact, when you make your request, we'll send two copies, one for you and one to give away. Choose one of three ways to connect with Insight for Living. If you're listening in the United States, call 1-800-772-8888. That's 1-800-772-8888. You'll also find it online at insight.org. More from Chuck Swindoll about creating a legacy of moral purity, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Creating a Legacy of Moral Purity, was copyrighted in 2004, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2005 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide.